Well, the last 24 hours have shown both the promise and also the challenges facing the Indiana economy. Yesterday, of course, the Pfizer announcement, 450 high-paying, high-tech jobs, truly a world event, a brand-new technology the world has waited for, and it's going to be made here in Indiana. This is the latest in a real hot streak that the state is on, including Toyota and Sallie Mae and Cisco and Bass Pro and Dreyfus and thousands of jobs just in the last few weeks. Now, on the very same day, of course, the long-awaited announcement about Delphi, every state with a significant GM Delphi presence is going to take a hit, and we will not be an exception. We'll be working, of course, to hold up for that company as we have the virtues of the Indiana economy, the same ones that have attracted so many new jobs in the recent weeks. 91,000 more Hoosiers working in January 06 than January 05. But again, for every two steps forward, there's often a step backward. And we've got a long, long, long way to go, even though there's been a lot of good news lately. The bill I signed today, I think, highlights a very important point that we've mentioned very often. We now believe that we are as fast and as businesslike and certainly as successful as any state when there's a competition for new investments. The IEDC has won 90-plus percent of the competitions where more than one state has been seeking a new investment like Pfizer or Toyota or Cisco, et cetera. But however successful we are in that transactional competition, that's going to be at the edges, at the margins. And the most important thing of all that we can do is to build the best sandbox in America, the very best environment and the very best climate for new jobs. And Bill HB 1380 continues a process of doing that. Between the major moves in Roads and Jobs Bill, the Telecommunications Reform Bill, and the elements of this bill, I believe that Indiana Sandbox has taken a dramatic step forward in becoming even more attractive and receptive to the new investment, the new kind of jobs that we will need to replace those that a changing dynamic economy inevitably and sadly sheds as it moves along. I want to single out, in addition to the elements of 1380, one piece that's in a bill I'll probably sign Monday, and that's the single factor tax. It was been obscured a little bit by bigger news, but this is important. From now on, Indiana will tax business income, corporate income, based solely on where your sales are. And up to now, if you invested in Indiana, if you had plant and payroll in Indiana, your taxes went up, because that factored into the tax formula. We're phasing out of that because we want to reward the Pfizers, the Ciscos, the Toyotas, the Sallie Mays, those who put large numbers of jobs and dollars in Indiana and then export their goods and services elsewhere. So it's a very important new addition, as I say, to the best sandbox in America. And now I'm going to make it law with thanks to people like John Smith and David Ford and Jackie Walorski and David Long and Tim Harris, just to mention a few. All right. It includes, it moves some of our incentives, the kinds the IEDC uses, in the direction of smaller businesses, for one thing. We have an incentive, the EDGE credit, which is a credit against your taxes if you do hire people and grow in the state. And that'll be available now to smaller companies, as will the credit for headquarters relocation. We also achieved something we failed to get in the first year that was part of our aiming higher agenda, and that's to make possible venture capital funds at the regional level. Indiana, in my opinion, needs more venture capital for small and startup companies, the kind that occasionally grow up and become great companies and employers, and that's also part of 1380.
In regards to the single sales factor credit, obviously whenever we make a change like that, the state will be taking in, you know, less revenue from these businesses than they were in the past. How much of a financial impact do we think this is going to have on the state? And presumably, I imagine we find this will be offset by the investment that will come to the state.
Yeah. Actually, the way it was done, it should be revenue neutral. There were other adjustments made that should offset any reduction. It would be minor in any event because while it rewards companies who hire lots of Hoosiers and put lots of capital dollars in our state, it will be less favorable to those who don't do those things. So there will be some businesses that might pay more, even as those that of the kind I just described do pay a little bit less. By the way, and I've mentioned this before, but it's very interesting. This was a very significant factor in the Toyota decision. You might remember on the day that the Toyota announcement was made, there was a lot in the national press about how Indiana secured these 1,000 jobs at a very low cost in terms of incentives. And it was contrasted starkly with Georgia's announcement of hundreds of millions of dollars that very same day for Kia. Actually, that understated the extent of that bargain for Indiana because by the explicit agreement with Toyota, reached way before the legislation passed, they agreed that they would forego the tax incentives, the EDGE credits and so forth, if we did ever change to single-factor taxation. And so now that that's happened, the incentives that Toyota will actually take advantage of there drop off to almost nothing, some training dollars and some infrastructure. But again, it was a very clear example of how building the right environment is really more important than the transaction-by-transaction competition, which we're determined to be the best in America at. But the most important thing you can do is have the best sandbox.
Do those incentives all drop off immediately? Because this is a five-year
phase-in. Yeah, we'll have to check and see. I don't know where the lines cross, Nikki. Remember, they don't get any credits till the plant's there and running and generating jobs and income. So there may be some that are collected before the phase-in is complete, but I want you to understand the general principle. At the time, I want to give Toyota credit, they were the ones who offered this as an alternative. At that time, here at this table, I really didn't think that it was too likely that we would secure single-factor taxation this year. But as it worked out, we did.
Governor, do you think most of the public is aware of the time change coming up? And a second part of that question is, will the state be fully prepared on Monday to have all of its clocks, computers, et cetera, set to the right time?
Well, there may have been somebody on an Antarctic expedition for the last year. But other than that, I think most folks, like most Americans, are well aware of that. And yes, the state will be ready. This one time, there'll have to be some computer adjustments, I'm told. Computers, of course, are built for the world to take into account daylight savings time. In Indiana, a lot of them have had to be jimmied in order to treat our unique approach to this. So they're going to have to be sort of reset on normal settings, I guess, one time, and then the electronics will take care of itself.
So you're confident that all that will be taken care of for the state, at least at the state level?
Yeah, I mean, I've asked about it, and it'll take a little work, again, to sort of set these in the way they were really originally built, I think, in most cases. But our folks are working on it, and they tell me don't expect any big problems.
Governor, can I ask you about all-day kindergarten? How firm and realistic is the date? There are a couple of schools in Johnson County that are concerned that they may not have enough buildings and teachers ready by 2007.
Yeah. Well, I'm eager to see it happen. I've been for it a long time. A broke state couldn't afford it, but we're not going to be broke anymore. We have balanced the budget. We're on our way back into the black. But there are some practical issues that I've asked the working team to talk about. Facilities is certainly one, and So we'll be working throughout the summer with all the stakeholders in education, try to get a plan that's as fast as practical, but still practical.
Is that date still firm, though, 2007?
You know me, I'm always in a hurry to get to a good idea. So if there, we would like to find a way to get to universal full-day kindergarten as fast as possible.
Would the state help fund new buildings and teachers if necessary?
Maybe. There may be ways to do that. I mean, that's why I wanted to get the thought process started now. I know there will be some practical implementation problems, and let's try to identify them now so we can present a bill to the legislature that anticipates them.
Back to daylight saving time real quick. If the history books were to if the history books are indeed to show that, yes, it was Governor Mitch Daniels that brought about the change in Indiana after decades, are you comfortable with that presentation?
Sure. It honored a commitment. People asked me, as they asked me about dozens of questions, good idea or bad idea? I said, good idea. Said we'd try to do it, and we did, and I feel good about that. It is relatively small on the list of things that we have done already or hope to do. Very small by comparison to changing the telecom laws of the state, balancing the budget of the state, solving a $3 billion transportation shortfall. These are all much, much bigger things. The bill I just signed will have, I think, more effect, positive effect on jobs and growth than DSD. But if you believe that we have a massive undertaking to bring about an economic comeback in this state and that you have to do everything you can think of that will help, this will help some. So I think it was well worth doing. Yeah.
Some of those counties are now changing their minds. Will you support them too if they apply to go back to Easter?
Sure. The issue was always, I thought, to get in step with the world economy through daylight saving time. To me, choice of time zone, not just to me, under federal law, is a local matter. And so I support the local choice. There was only one exception to that where there was a conflict among localities that threatened to fracture a metropolitan area. That's the only exception. So for the Emily Latella counties that said, never mind, that's I'm for it.
But one of the counties, Pulaski, is, although they went to Central, are thinking about not actually observing it. Uh-huh. How would you feel about that as far as the confusion factor?
For me, it's up to them. You know, again, I believe in local decision about this. You may know that we've had lots of counties during the era of chaos in Indiana time, which is coming to an end now. Things are going to be much more clear from now on. But we've had lots of counties doing their own thing. Most of them were small, and only people like me who travel all over the place have seen it, but I can take you to several counties been making up their own time for years.
I understand there's a group that wants to file a lawsuit against it saying it's unconstitutional. What's your response?
They're wasting their money. But this is America. There's somebody planning a lawsuit on almost every matter all the time. But no, I'm aware of the notion, but it's been looked at, and nobody I know takes it seriously.
Talk about the president's visit tomorrow and what role you may have in seeing him, spending time with him.
Showing the respect any president is due on behalf of the citizens of this state. It's Mike Sodrel's day, and I'll be there to help lead the cheers for him. And he really should have the spotlight. But of course, I'll be there to greet the president. And I think I'm going to provide a little entertainment for the crowd while he's doing other things. So whatever they ask me to do.
You'll be at the airport then?
No, I'm really not planning to be out there. Done enough of those and thought we'd let other people have that chance, but I'll see them at the site, and as I say, I think I'm going to speak to folks while he's taking pictures or something.
Thank you.
Governor, there's reports up in Northwest Indiana that Scott Kennedy is going to resign as mayor today, and he has an announcement at noon. Can you shed any light on that? And if not, can you just tell me how your relations have been with the mayor?
Well, the mayor needs to make his own announcements. I'll say that our relationship's become a very close one. I have a lot of respect for him. Obviously, I appreciated he was one of those who didn't let party get in the way of outspoken support for major moves. He knows that, among other things, it's going to be probably make the Gary Airport a reality, and that it has enormous positive effects for Gary and all of Northwest Indiana. And so we've had lots of interaction. He helped me get to know Mayor Daley when we were first studying the idea of whether we might do as Chicago did and try to improve our future through a lease of our road. So I've got a very high regard for him, and that's about all I should say.
Going back to the president's visit tomorrow, considering all the controversies that surrounded President Bush, do you see him more as a liability or an asset for candidates?
Well, obviously Mike Sodrell thinks he's an asset, and I do too. I think, first of all, there's still a strong reservoir of affection and appreciation for the president of this state and an admiration for his personal qualities. I think even people who disagree with a given policy tend to respect his sincerity of and his courage of conviction. So those are qualities Hoosiers tend to appreciate in their presidents, and I think they do in this one.
Mm-hmm. You said you asked a working group to look at some practical issues.
Right.
Can you elaborate on what those issues are and also who you've engaged in the working group?
Well, Dave Shane will have the lead, and he'll be working, as we did on this year's education bills, with all the stakeholder groups. But I think in particular we'll want to talk to superintendents and principals who will be the implementers of this. Facilities. The availability of facilities could be one issue. The timetable, whether it can all be done at one time or phased in, we'll want to hear from everybody. And I'm sure there are practical implementation questions that I haven't thought of, or maybe no one has, and that's the reason to start now and see if we can't flush those out and figure out the best way to solve them.
Isn't money one of those issues? And Luke Kelly said that I'm not sure that this could be done. Start maybe with the low-income students first and then phase in gradually over 5 years?
Well, I'm aiming higher than that and in more of a hurry than that. One reason that we tried to tackle the fiscal problems of this state so head-on, many people said it'll take a few years to get back to the black. We said, no, let's do it in two or even one if possible, and we think we've done it in one. And my main reason for doing that was so that the state would have, without tax increases, the wherewithal to do important new things like full-day kindergarten. So I think we're going to be in a position to do it on a fast timetable. But I understand Luke's caution. We don't know for sure what receipts will look like and what the overall economy will look like. And July, or let's say September 07, still a long way off. But I'm for trying to do it as fast as possible, and that's our objective.
Governor, about a week ago, there was a report that your Department of Labor Commissioner had suspended mine inspections despite the fact that the state law required them. He was saying they were repetitive and costing too much money, essentially. Are you concerned that other agencies might be ignoring state laws and their zest to be more efficient and save money?
No, actually, I think folks in the mining community, including those who represent mine workers, from every indication I have, are very pleased with the Department of Labor and its interest in mining and in mine safety. Indiana's mine safety record is a very good one, and we want it to be the best in America. I think, first of all, in that one agency, there's been a lot of attention, and as there should be, to this issue. And quite to the contrary, one reason we measure everything in this administration is to try to make certain that laws are being faithfully and fully complied with, and that our agency heads know, and we're about to issue our new performance report, many of the measures in there have to do with how frequently things are inspected and whether, most importantly, whether the results are better or not. Are accidents in the area of safety, are accidents coming down or not? That's what really matters. And we take that very seriously, more so, I think, than anybody before us.
So how did we get to a point where we didn't inspect any lines for over a year?
Well, I don't know that to be the truth. And I bet you, you know, let me go check the facts before we accept that as gospel.
I know you're headed up to Purdue to talk about the flu pandemic possibility.
Yeah.
What is the state doing to gear up for the pandemic? And is the state doing enough to look at the possibility of losing a third of its staff to a quarantine kind of situation like you're planning on?
The answer is Indiana has apparently done as much as any state, but it's not nearly enough. And this meeting today is in part to propel the whole planning process further forward. A little as we like to accept this or believe this, America is very vulnerable to an event that we have not seen in our lifetime. We like to think medical science has conquered the disease and so forth, but it hasn't conquered the influenza virus, which is constantly changing, and against which we do not have perfect defenses. And so we are going to have to be ready in the event that a pandemic were to break out, that the virus were to move from birds to humans and in a big way. We're going to have to be prepared to do things none of us has really contemplated in a long time. That's what today's meeting is about. And I wish it weren't necessary, but the more I've read, the more I've learned about this phenomenon, the clearer it is that we really do have to be prepared to take steps that are going to seem extreme if they come.
In regards to the flu summit, I had talked to someone from the State Department of Health yesterday who had pretty seriously stated that if we were to have an outbreak in the state, it would basically be up to the state to deal with it, that we could not count necessarily on the federal government to be able to help manage the problem.
Yeah.
Simply assuming it would be happening all over the country.
This is a central fact and a central reason for today's summit. My friend Mike Leavitt is going to make that point. Now, as I think we demonstrated in flood and in multiple tornadoes last year, in Indiana we look to ourselves, we look to our own, and we take care of each other. We don't wait on a check in the mail, we don't wait for Big Daddy. But it won't, in the case of a pandemic flu, there won't be that option anyway. By its definition, it will be happening everywhere at once, and there will, and no one will be able to sit around unprepared and then expect somebody else from anywhere to come bail them out. In fact, we're going to have to be ready at the local level. We won't be able to suddenly disperse thousands of nurses and paramedics and so forth from state government either. That's exactly why this summit is pointed at having the most careful and complete and very serious set of local plans in place, and then hope the heck we never need them. Thanks.